Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel.
Here's
Each week, they unleash their raw, stripped-down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff, too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
Yeah, I always told Steve, you know, start recording, man, right away, as soon as we get on the screen. And then I sort of forgot that he was recording. And I said, Russ, do you want to hear a great story? And
you're like, no, yeah, you said hilarious.
Hilarious story. And you go, yeah, for once, that would be great. And then I started to launch into it and said, oh, no, we're recording. I can't tell this story. Do you think one day, Rusty, hi again, everybody. Jungle Jim Jerome and Russ Cortinel coming at you with another episode of The Suspendables. I wonder, Rusty, if one day we can have, probably after we secure a sponsor, that we can have a bloopers and like a blooper reel of stuff that, well, when we want to lose a sponsor, maybe we'll do that. what a week it was.
Full of good ideas, aren't you?
Yeah, I got a million of them. Yeah. How come you always use the same one?
Yeah.
What a week it was. Great show last week. We had on Corey Hirsch, your buddy, to talk about many things. First of all, the guy was hilarious.
Yeah, Russ. He's funny.
Like, what he's a
dry.
Dry, but what? Like, it's like he was a seasoned veteran on doing shows, you know? Like the way it came off. Hilarious stories about the two of you and your playing days. And so we had a million laughs. And then, of course, got into this subject about his... to hit it on the head, I mean, his battle with mental illness. You know, we want to, there you go. Yeah, that'll help you. Good, yeah. So it's well documented, you know, that he started talking about it many years ago. And so we had him on. I'd heard different things about it. I followed him a little bit through the big Bell Mental Health Day. And then I read the story and we said, we got to get this guy on.
Mm-hmm.
And when we did, he said, you know, I was never sure how to bring it up, right, Russ? And
yeah.
I said, how do we do this? And he said, okay, do you want to talk about the time I tried to commit suicide now?
Right?
Just whammo, you know, whammo. But let me read a few things that, you know, of comments from people that we had about it, all of which were kind of staggering, the effect that the guy had on people. Frank writes us, you know, your latest episode of the podcast is by far the best one. Your interview with Corey Hirsch took my breath away. I can honestly say I have never heard such an honest conversation in my life. And I've looked at a bunch of them. I thought that was really the best one, that you got to go back and listen to the show. Quite a guy, Rusty, Corey.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a great, great guy. He went through a lot. And just reading everything since has just been brutal, good and bad. I mean,
yeah,
you feel for somebody who's struggled all alone. He was all alone, you know, and dealing with everything. And now he seems like he's in a good space. You know, he's trying his best. So
right.
That's all we can ask.
Right. A couple other comments that we had about the show. Ian Bickle writes, thanks for the Hirsch pod. As someone who has been working my way through anxiety after years of abuse of my body in a kitchen as a chef and masking a lot of issues with alcohol, it's amazing to hear these stories. Mine is not as harsh as Corey's, but it's a scary thing. When he said it's like being hit with a taser, I couldn't agree more. Thanks again, boys. So if we had one or two of those, we had a bunch. So
yeah,
thank you to Corey. And I know we will get him back on one day.
So. Yeah, I talked to him today. He said he'd come back on.
Yeah, good. Good. I'm always fearful these guys are going to replace us, Russ. They're so good. You know,
us? Not a chance. You, maybe.
What are you doing now? What are you doing? You're back in LA. You've been back for a few weeks now. And are you working, selling, playing golf? What's the deal?
It's just Russ beautiful Cortland? Here right now. It's 79 today. So I played golf this morning with Lawton. And
Your
my son.
Yep.
And then I went for a walk, walked the loop, listened to some tunes, and now I'm working with you. I got a cool invite this week. Sunday, I'm going to Billy Bush's 50th birthday party from...
The Billy Bush?
Yeah, the Billy Bush from the E channel.
Do you grab him anywhere you want to, Billy?
Yeah. Don't go there.
No, I won't. Don't you worry. Don't. You do not need to warn me about saying things that are off the page. Well, are you going to go?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We've become buddies. He came up to Gozer and he was a guest of Andrew McGinnis, who's a fellow member friend at Gozer. And so it's Scotty Upshaw and I are partners and you play a nine hole match, five, 9-hole matches of different.
Who's Scotty Upshaw? Sorry, Russ.
Hockey player has a big podcast right now.
Okay.
Should know. Yeah. Anyways, Scott Up, he's a great guy. Played for a million hockey teams and everywhere he went, he was loved. Mm-hmm. So Uppy and I were playing against Billy Bush and Andrew McGinnis up at Gozer, guess now 3 years ago. And Billy has been fired for the Trump tape that came up with him being vulgar towards women. Mm-hmm. And Billy was laughing and then Billy gets fired. So, okay, that's who we're playing against. So Scotty and I are looking at each other like, this is going to be interesting. And on the third hole of the 9-hole match, Billy goes, so when are you guys going to fucking bring up the Trump tape with me?
Yeah. And
from that moment on, we just freaking fell in love with this guy. We had the best time. It was the funnest 9 holes. And we've become buddies since. So he's a big hockey fan. Very good at what he does. I really, really enjoy him. And anyways, he's back working and he's having a big 50th at the Burbank studio lot on Sunday with Midland and Kelly James are performing. And
cool.
Yeah, it's like a 4 till 8 party. So four in the afternoon till 8. So fairly civilized.
Let's get him on the show.
I'll ask him. See if he'll come on.
Without going into anyway, Billy Bush, this host of Entertainment Tonight or whatever, one of those shows, it has been. If you saw him, you'd recognize him. Sort of gets caught in a tough position on a bus with Donald Trump. They're talking about girls. He says something derogatory, untoward. The thing went viral. But everyone knew about it. And so this guy, as Rusty just reminds us, so when are you going to bring this up? Which is super cool, the guy.
Yeah, it was.
Because you're like me, you're going,
break the ice.
Hope I don't say something by accident.
Yeah.
Or I'm always worried, Russ, I'm always okay with myself. I'm always worried about the other people I'm with.
Yeah.
That they're going to go ballistic.
His dad's brother was President Bush and his uncle. He's from the Bush family.
Right, the big Bush family, right? Yeah. What did he say about it, Russ?
He goes, I laughed at what he said and I got fired.
Right.
So anyways, he's back working and he's a better, he said actually he's a better person for it. He had to do a lot of inward healing and thinking. Sure. And he's got three daughters, I think.
Ooh, yuck.
Right. So, right. I mean, he took it on the chin and, you know, he had some real mental health issues after that.
Because
what happened? I mean, you lose your livelihood and you probably lost some friends and who knows what else. And he was going through a divorce. I mean, there was a lot going on there. So anyways, he's good now. He's doing a great job. And I follow him on Instagram. He's funny. Like, he's super funny. I love his freaking voice. He's just got a great voice.
I'll have to tune in.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a guy comes away, like he says, gets caught in this moment. It's the probably biggest regret, right? But you don't know at the time going, oh, my God, I got caught in the middle of this thing.
Well, somebody else is telling the story and he's laughing at it.
Right. No, I get that.
Yeah.
Do you worry, Russ, ever about, speaking of social media, I know you're guarded, you're smart. You've kept a great reputation, well-deserved, right, over your years as a celebrity. Your daughter now is kind of on this meteoric rise in the world. And I'm not being, that's not a stretch when I say that. And your son, right, is got some exposure now to, certainly through this show as well, right, where we're kind of going to watch his career. And
yeah.
And your other daughter is now in university, Russ?
Yeah, USC, playing soccer.
Playing soccer. Do you ever worry, say, with Allie, for example, who's married to Eric Kendricks of the Minnesota Vikings, have you had to have any, like, she stands alone for sure, but she's still your daughter. Have you ever had any discussions with her going, God, make, you know, it's nice that you've sort of opened up about your life and her, mm-hmm. her situations. And when she talks about mental illness, do you ever worry, Russ, that it'll be too open of a life on social media? Like,
I do. I easy worry
now, Allie, maybe you don't want to tell people that or what?
Well, I worry about the crazy people out there that might try to find her or something, you know, cause she's a pretty girl and mm-hmm. track her down where she is. I worry about that kind of stuff, but Paris did a great job with her early on and just said, make sure you keep it classy.
Right.
And when you put something on the, on a text, an email, social media, it's there forever.
Right.
It isn't going away. So just be really, really careful of what you do and think about what you're putting out there. So Paris really did a great job working with her and the other kids when they were younger. Just watch what, you know.
Because your dad's a celebrity, right?
And
a,
well, no, yeah. They themselves just like watch what pictures you put up or just be careful. And so Paris, I think, showed them some mistakes other people made mm-hmm. on social media and just said, look it, now this is going to be here forever about this person. So she also, like, she's big into the workouts and the food and everything. And then she right. also talks about eating pizza and hot dog, you know, and hamburgers. Like, you know, she's trying to send a positive message to other women and right. girls that you can eat healthy, have fun, work out, and then have that day or two that you just want to eat, you know,
yeah,
whatever
yeah.
you want. And I love that message. I think her platform for mental health is fantastic because that touches on everyone, men and women. Mm-hmm. And I think her food and health regime for mothers and daughters is great. It's a great conversation because I've had friends who have teenage daughters that have come up to me and said, tell Allie, she's doing us a huge favor because as moms, we want to look our best and we want our daughters to be healthy. And right. they're saying they're being healthy together because they're following Allie and what she's doing. So I think overall she's got a good message.
Yeah. You know, one of the things, and often I get comments about the show, that we do is how you're very good at taking people inside your life, Russ, and you're not shy about it, you know? And one of the things, there's two stories here that, so often you'll get, oh yeah, whatever, you know, they're celebrities, they're rich, you know, cry me yeah. a river, sort of you or anybody else, right? And then there's two stories that I remember, and it made me step back and go, okay, now do you really want to be a celebrity? And one was Gretz, who had said to me when he moved into Sherwood, he's been in two or three homes there, and one of them was, I think the first home he had there. And I remember, this is great. And you're selling it and you're going to move somewhere else and probably stay in Sherwood. Anyway, the story was that just caught me totally off guard that it will never have anything to do with my life or most of us who listen to you guys is he said that it's kind of too close to the road, the house. I want a house that's set back mm-hmm. with a gate on it because I'm worried about my kids getting kidnapped.
Yeah.
And I went, what, you know, and you know, he's not saddled with it, but it was just like, okay, do you really want that life now? And that yeah. was, you know, and the other one was, I was sitting having dinner at a charity event here. And I was sitting with a one of the security guards for Daryl Cates, who is the owner of the Edmonton Oilers. Mm-hmm. And he's worth billions
okay? yeah.
well over 10 billion. He was the Rexall pharmacy guy amongst other things that he did. And he's Jewish. And I remember the one of the reporters here, they actually move him around a lot, Russ. The security team insists on he doesn't stay in Edmonton too long. He's got a place that's under the bubble in Vancouver. He's in Palm Springs. He's got various homes around.
So everybody knows where he now is.
Well, they knew he's there, but they don't know addresses.
Right? I'm kidding.
Yeah, I know. And anyway, when you hear that, you go, oh, okay, wow, the guy's got five or six homes. And then you hear this guy going, well, we need to move him around, okay? Because he might, you know, at one time he might have been on some sort of, if you can believe this, Russ, an Al-Qaeda list, you know? Wow. And when you think, that's I want scary. That life, I want $13 yeah. billion, I want all the cars, and then you go, you know, so it's not always a bowl of cherries for you guys worrying about your children and other things. So anyway.
Well, I didn't have that problem, but my wife, when her mom and her adopting father got divorced when she was two, he used to kidnap her. Yes. And when Sarah would be traveling on the road, he would kidnap her for ransom and didn't do anything to her, but he would take her and police weren't doing anything about it. And so this went on for, I think, 6 years. And I don't know how many times, but I know the last time. And the last time was she was 9 years old Sarah called Frank Sinatra and he took care of it. So there is that factor of people with wealth and fame that, you know, the kids come into play, but thank God the person never did anything to Paris, but,
wow, you know, scary.
Yeah, it is scary. And I know the house you're talking about, Wayne. So Wayne's first house at Sherwood, it was on the road and they end up buying the acres up on top of the hill and built that beautiful big home. They actually owned it twice. They just sold it last year.
Right.
And it was, you know, gated with a big yard and, you know, the kids could run and play and they had tennis court and sport court and all that. So it made a lot more sense, that house, for a year-round home for them, where the first house they had was really when he was playing. It was supposed to be, it was just for the summer. Mm-hmm. They would go out to Sherwood. He lived in town and he would go out there. And then when it became full time after he retired, it was too small a place and it was close to the road. And what I didn't realize is on Mondays here at Sherwood, we rent out the golf course because it's closed to charity events and companies that want to rent the place. And so I knew about that. Yeah, I knew about that, but it's called Maintenance Day and it's pretty much in Southern California. All the golf courses are closed on Mondays and a lot of them rent them out to charities. So Wayne was telling me that they would find out where he lived and they would come and park in front of his house and take pictures and yikes. And that he did not like that, obviously. So they moved up top where Taj Mahaki, they called it.
Taj Mahaki, yeah. I've been there. I've stayed. Yeah. I was staying there for 2 days and Janet didn't even know I was there. Wayne did, but she didn't know I was there.
The first night Walter stayed there, he got up to take a pee. At 3 o'clock in the morning, he told me it took him 3 hours to find his room.
It's true.
He made the wrong turn.
Yeah. They got, anyway, it was an exceptional property, but it's the real deal. You know, Mark Messier always said that, you know, he loved his life. It was great. He became a superstar. He became, you know, very attracted to people for his candor and his absolute competitiveness, you know, the meanness that they talk about on ice, those eyes, you know, when he looked at you as I know, you know, guys who played with him, you know, and it was very clear, that he was the leader and he was the boss of the team. And all you had to do is get a glare. But he got a little twitchy when he said, you know, he lives down south now in the States. And he got a little twitchy about his privacy near the end of his career when he would show up in a town, you know, when he was playing for New York, I guess, and he'd be in Edmonton. And there'd be a guy there asking for an autograph who had, you know, was obviously one of these seekers, okay, who are seeking autographs to make money. Uh-huh. And he said, I'm okay with that. You know, I'm okay with it. It is what it is. And you're not going to change it. Where I really got twitchy was when that same guy would be 3,000 miles away when I showed up in California.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that's a little.
And then got a little twitchy. Anyway, Let's talk about some other stuff, Rusty. This hockey's underway.
You could use a stalker right about now, a female. 40, I'd love to have a 40 to 50 years old, single.
I'd love to have a stalker. Hey, you're stalking me? Come on in. Yeah. Come on in.
The door's open.
I got a room for you.
You
man.
Don't even have to break in. The door's open.
It's all here. Stalk away. Yeah. Stalk away.
Just a reminder, if you'd like to connect online with Russ or Jimmy or engage with them on social media, find out how at thesuspendables.com.
Rusty, hockey season's underway. The games are being played. I ran into a few kids who are over here playing for the Oilers, and how's it going? And, of course, their deal might be a lot different than other rookies. And the guy said, I said, are you nervous? He said, no, I'm okay. They're from Russia.
Oh.
he said, no, I'm not nervous, but the most nervous I got was, he's a defenseman. He said everything was going great until they put Connor on the ice.
Oh, yeah.
And then he said, then I wanted to take a shit.
Yeah.
He said, how are you going to defend this guy? But
check, please.
You're a rookie, Rusty. When you remember when the first days of your first camp opened up? And
yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, we used to, the first 2 years as a rookie, we had to sit in a different locker room. So the main locker room, that's where all the players from the year before sat, and then a couple of the potential guys that were going to make it.
Yep.
And then
they get to sit in the big room, so you already know that they got a better shot.
The rookies were all with the minor league guys, and the minor league guys were freaking hard on us, probably harder on us than the guys playing on the big team. Mm-hmm. And then you knew when you made it, when you moved into the big room. So that was cool.
You were in the first room, the low room first.
Yeah, I was in the shit room and then got to go over. This is in Toronto. So you can imagine how old the locker room was across the hall. And it was nerve wracking. I mean, shit, I was only 18 years old and you really stick to the other draft picks. So I Jeff Jackson, who's now Connor's agent, mm-hmm. he was the second pick overall. So he and I became best of friends and roommates, and Dan Hodgson was there. And then, a couple of the guys who were a year older than us, 19 years old, like Gary Nyland,
veteran,
Jim Benning, who's the GM now in Vancouver. Sure. He was there. He'd been in Toronto for a couple of years. So the young guys kind of stick together, and the old guys are hard on us. I think it's totally different now because I think they welcome everybody in pretty much. I don't think you're allowed to be hard on anyone anymore.
Right.
So the teasing was nonstop. And I don't know who gave me this advice, but they said if they tease you or when they tease you, because they are going to tease you, just laugh and don't show that you're upset. Even if it's just killing you inside, just laugh, laugh at yourself. Mm-hmm. As soon as I did that, they left me alone. But Jeff Jackson used to just get so pissed off.
Oh, no.
And they were relentless on him. And and he had these big lips, and he kind of looked like Mick Jagger a little bit. And they were, and he would pout when they were teasing him. And I'm like, oh my God. And they were relentless. Relentless. But anyways, it was. And then once you get over that, and then all of a sudden you're getting, Boris Helming's inviting you to Thanksgiving dinner, and the guys it was good. The nonstop threat of getting shaved, getting your balls shaved and your head shaved was relentless. Like, rookie, we're going to shave you. Yeah, we're going to get you next road trip. So that was like brutal. Every time you turn a corner, you're waiting to get attacked. But that shit's over now. Now they just do the rookie dinner meal. So they actually look on the schedule and they say, okay, this is the night we're going to go out and get hammered and eat as much food as we can.
Right.
So the rookies know when they're going to get smoked on the bill.
Right. I always thought, Rusty, the old hazing thing, You know, you're gonna get your balls shaved.
Yeah.
I thought, well, that's a good idea, right? It scares the rookie. But then, so then it comes time to, well, I'm a veteran and someone hands me the razor. I'm going, I'm not touching his balls. You got to get another rookie to do it.
Yeah. I was never a big hazing guy.
Yeah, I know you weren't. I know you weren't. So that's kind of good advice, Russ, that they said. Were you, how did you handle nerves, Russ, on the ice? And what did you think you had to do to impress the coaches? I mean, you weren't a fighter, but maybe you thought, well, maybe I do have to fight. Back in those days, right?
No, Russ, I didn't have to fight. Actually, they didn't want me to fight, and because I wasn't. So that was off the books for me. But I just offensive. I was drafted as an offensive forward, so just putting up numbers. That's all I was really worried about. And then you, as you get older, you realize, okay, I got to be responsible defensively. And then you start learning that part of the game. Mm-hmm. And that's more of a maturity thing. Mm-hmm. Not everybody comes in the league and goes, I'm going to worry about my defensive responsibilities, because growing up, all we think about is really doing what we can for the team to win. And if you're offensive, that's what your focus is on, not on stopping the puck going in the net. It's putting the puck in the net. And as you get older and more mature, you start to learn that part of the game. And that for me really didn't happen until I went to Montreal, because the focus on defense was
pretty deep.
Yeah, it was very important to Montreal, and they had proven that they had won in the past. They had won in 86 mm-hmm. against the Flames. So, they did have offensive players, but everybody had bought into playing really sound defensive hockey. And so that took me a while. It took me maybe 10 or 15 games. And then finally they sat me down and go, okay, we got to have a meeting with you.
defensive.
Yeah. You got to, this is how we play, and you got to do this and this and that. And then I just worked on it, and they worked with me, and I got better at it. And they moved me to right wing, which helped, because really being a sound defensive centerman is, tough, because you're going from one end, you're going from one net to the other net. When you're on right wing, you're just coming back to the point and looking after that part of the game. And so the game's changed now, but that's what it was like when I played. Was Matt Snazlin was awesome. He goes, we go hard, try to score. And when we don't, we get our D-man, coast, get your energy back, and get ready to go back and attack.
Not too much back checking.
Yeah, not too much.
Rusty, this is kind of the day and age generation of hockey where you see, we're lucky here in Edmonton, but the hockey world is lucky to see Connor McDavid.
Luck left Edmonton in the 80s.
Yeah.
Fuck.
No, that's hurtful. I was there.
We're lucky in Edmonton? Yeah, for getting first overall picks.
Well, we are. So anyone else would like that? It's kind of the day of the dipsy doodle, Russ, where a lot of these guys they can do amazing things in practice, but some of them are bringing it to the game, Russ, where they're doing the hook and drag, they're doing the puck between the legs, to score and shootouts and shit like that. Yeah. And if these guys go into camp, Russ, is good idea for them to try that shit in front of the coaches or not?
Nah, I don't know. Not right away. I mean, sometimes it just happens. Stuff naturally happens, but
knee jerk or something. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't want to be too showy. I mean, you want to show your goods and show your talent, but don't want to be too cocky. I just saw a great thing on Instagram. The Arizona Coyotes are the first team to make it optional on dress clothing for game days. And I swipe over and it said, and this guy's comment, yeah, and they made winning optional too. I don't normally read the comments, but I was curious just to see what people thought.
That's funny, man. Yeah.
Because I am old school. I like it when athletes wear suits. I really do. I like it when they dress really nicely ties, you could, I'm now not a tie guy, but
right.
I don't know. Ago. I think it's respectful that the players in all sports. I don't like it when I see an athlete going to a game in a sweatsuit or, you know, afterwards. Yeah. And I think, you know what, we're getting paid. We're professionals and we should dress accordingly. I mean, would you like your surgeon to come in board shorts and a freaking muscle beater and go, okay, I'm ready.
I'm getting so old fashioned. When they step off the bus, Russ, okay, the outfits for sure. I agree with you. Okay. It's like, okay, this isn't a rave that we're at here, boys. Okay. And the other one is with the giant headset on, you know, that they're walking by these people, not acknowledging them where they've got their earmuffs on, you know, the beats,
but you know what? You know? The guys are getting pumped up. They're listening to music and they're in the zone. And, you know, I don't disagree with that because we all love our music before the game. Right. And I like the music as long as they were allowed to play it in the locker room. And I'd be pissed when, okay, music, you got to turn the music off. I'm like, fuck, can't we just, and then we're going to go out to warm ups and they're going to have loud music on again. I mean, I didn't understand the rule of, okay, you got to turn the music off at this certain time. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, if the coach has to come in, but if the coach wants to come in and talk, of course, or the guys want to talk, but you've already done your preparation.
Yeah.
You've had your meetings, you've seen your video and you're in your zone getting focused to get ready. And music is a big part of it for a lot of guys and their music. So the guys wearing the headsets and all that, they're listening to what they want to listen to. And, you know, so be it.
Right.
I don't think they're not ignoring the crowd, Jimmy. They're not they're getting off that bus. They got their headset on. They don't show them signing on. You know, some guys sign, some guys don't. But a lot of times now they don't let the fans near the buses anymore. Because the security is so strict. So those guys, the only guys seeing that the team come off is really that cameraman that's catching it.
Okay. All right. How do you think you and I would look, Russ, in the suits that they wear now where they're like 4 inches short, tight? Remember, well, you guys used to wear the big Hugo Boss suits, you know, with the big wide lapels. And
Well, yeah, we'd be in shape, Jimmy.
Yeah. Yeah, we would. Great stuff, Rusty. One of the unfortunate things about the start of the seasons is holdouts with guys and contract holdouts. In Ottawa, you got Tkachuk holding out. They thought they would make a deal. He's kind of a franchise guy, and he hasn't signed a contract yet.
How much
and
is now, he asking?
We don't. I don't know. Steve would know that.
Because they offered him $8 million, right? And
jump on here, Stevie. Go ahead.
Okay, so what we know is, we don't know anything for sure. It's all media speculation. Nobody wants to negotiate through the media, so we're getting reports. The first report was, okay, Tkachuk's holding out for a signing bonus. Then the next one was, okay, he wants more than $8 million. He wants $8.4 million and a long-term deal. And the latest now is that he wants a bridge deal like his brother Matthew. So those are the reports that are going around.
What's a bridge deal?
It's basically a shorter term deal that'll help get you to unrestricted free agency.
Right. Okay.
I used to like Steve, but I know this is a podcast, but I can see Steve right now and he's wearing a fucking Green Bay Packers shirt.
All right. It's coming off.
Right. It's coming off. Take the thing off. All right. We want this on the video. There we go.
Underneath is a Bears shirt. No,
yeah,
I'm kidding.
Yeah. One after another. Yeah. Yeah. We always used to tease Paul. Attaboy.
Okay. I like you again.
It was you who started it, and then I picked it up about teasing Paul Coffey with his kid with jerseys because Coff played for about 90 different teams. So here's the deal, Rusty. So he's holding out. Thank you, Steve, for that. So he's holding out, and what really bothers me about it, Russ, you're the expert here, so we need to hear from you in the end of this thing about what it's all about, is often these guys are preaching, you know, I want to stay in Ottawa. I love this team. It's, you know, it's not about me. It's all about the team. It's all about the team. But this thing is all about you, Tkachuk. Okay. It is all about you. And I can't help but think, Russ, how disruptive is this? If you come to camp, even as a veteran, and you played together with the guy the year before, and you go busting into camp going, What are you doing, dude? Just sign the freaking deal, Russ. This isn't back in the day, Russ, when guys were, you know, 50% apart. You know, you probably played in that, yeah. Right? Where it's like,
yeah,
okay, we go to arbitration. The guy's glad he did. He got, you know, 40% more of what they were going to pay him. I don't like them, Russ. I don't like them, but are they part of the deal, Russ? Talk to us about it.
Well, I mean, if he's only 5% off, because we're talking 8 to 8.4, so it's roughly around 5%. Mm-hmm. He wants 5% more than they're asking. I can't believe there's not a deal there. If that's exactly what he's wanting, if they're $2 million apart per year, then that's a big deal. But 5%, $400,000, that's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. But 5% is not. And so that's a tough one, holding out for 5%.
Why do they hold out, Russ?
Well, because that's the threat. That's the only thing a player can do is say, okay, I'm not going to come. Now you're with one of your best players. And that's the unfortunate part about it is if he shows up, then the owner and the manager, you know, the manager's going to the owner because that's a big deal. Mm-hmm. The smaller deals, I'm sure there's a few GMs that probably can do almost anything they want, but when it comes to your top three or four highest paid players, the manager's going to the GM or the GM, sorry, is going to the owner and saying, okay, I'm laying it all out for you. This is what's going on. So, you know, that's probably what's happening in Ottawa is the manager's talking to the owner and maybe the owner is and the GM have said, hey, this is all we're willing to pay. Mm-hmm. And the player goes, okay, I'm going to stay home till you got more money.
Who generally, Russ, over all your years around the game, who generally wins in these standoffs?
Well, billionaires are more winner. There's more winners who are billionaires than millionaires. The hockey players are the millionaires.
Right.
Who really loses is the fans because they don't get to see their favorite players. So.
Right.
And sometimes that player gets traded.
Right. And you're kind of disenfranchising yourself with the fans, you know?
They're going to get upset at somebody. They're either going to be mad at the team or they're going to be mad at the player. They're going to be upset at somebody.
Right.
And hopefully it's short lived and they get rolling and it'll be forgotten. So.
Right. Stevie, of course, is in Ottawa and is a rabid Ottawa Sens fan. He's been there from the beginning. So we were just talking about who wins. You know, that the owner's going to pay. And Steve said, well, Eugene Melnyk has spent a decade not paying his top players. Yeah. So, if you're on the team, Rusty, is it like this guy, you played with him the year before, maybe you're his line mate, and then this thing comes up that he's holding out. Does it change your feeling about the guy, Rusty? Or do you pull him aside and go, dude, we're trying to put a squad together here. Fuck off with the holding out.
Usually it's good for the players. Now they have a salary cap, so it takes away from some of the money available for other players. But no, mm-hmm. usually the players stick together. And I mean, the only time players don't is when they don't like somebody. And he's probably a well-liked player on his team. And so the guys are probably pulling for him.
Right. They'll get a deal done.
Yeah.
Rusty, a couple of things. One major one. There is a story out there today. One I want a yes or no on, first of all, Russ, because it's come up against 40 friggin' 9 years ago or something. I don't know that Paul Henderson scored the goal we've talked about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Hall of Fame or not, Russ, for him?
Well, the Hall of Fame has become more open to more players. And,
right.
You know, we've been recognizing European players, so we've got Larionov in there and some other players. So, you know, for that goal, yeah, I think he should be in there. I don't see why not. His jersey just sold for millions of dollars. It's a big thing for Canada. So,
right.
You know, I don't see why not. You know, we're
all right. Your opinion is,
I would have disagreed 10 years ago.
Why?
Because it was an international event, not an NHL event.
Good, because that's what I think too.
Yeah. But what we've done in the last 10 years with the Hall of Fame is we've created this, like, you know, more open, like all these other things.
Inclusivity with all the other parts allowing, of the room.
You know, but there's builders and then there's this, but they've the criteria to get in is not as hard as it once was. You know, there were years when they didn't induct anybody because they didn't feel anybody was worthy. Now it's like, okay, we got to have 3 or 4 or 5 people every year.
And I think that's a problem because it's backfired on them. The one year that I forget the 3 or 4 names that people are going, they shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, there's a few.
Right.
And it's not their fault. I mean, it really isn't. Nobody's buying. You're not buying a space, renting a space there. Mm-hmm. There's a group of people that picked that person, and they came up with a reason why. And I just think, you know, it's a special place, but with more and more players getting in, you know, Larionov, he played a few years and his prime was when he wasn't in the NHL. And he still came over and was a really good player, but should he be in the Hall of Fame for the last part of his career? I don't know. I think they judged him.
I can tell what you think. Yeah.
Well, no, I love Igor. I mean, I really truly love him. I think I know he's a wonderful human being. He's really smart. He was a great player, but he wasn't the great player he was once he got to the NHL. The reason he got to come over and play was because the Russians thought, you know, he was on the spiral downhill, and he proved them wrong. He played for a long time, but we didn't see the best player of Igor Larionov. We saw a good player, but was that worthy of the Hall of Fame? I think the reason he got in was because everything he did before he came to the NHL.
Three players from the 72 Soviet series are in the Hall of Fame: Tretiak, Yakushev, and Karlamov.
If they're in, then Henderson should be in, right?
Good one, absolutely.
Right, because they didn't play in the NHL.
Isn't that relevant for sure?
Yeah,
good one. Fuck, you're smart, Russ. Sometimes
I don't know about that. The fact checkers are probably out there going, "Fuck, Russ doesn't know what the hell he's doing."
You know what we should do? Yeah, yeah. How good would you and I do on these shows, these sports shows, where they say at the end of the night they have fun and go point out the mistakes we made?
Oh,
you know?
God! Oh my God! Don't start.
So Rusty, here's not a great story, but it's been around for a while. You know, think of concussion protocols and think of, you know, your brother went through that and where they are now saying, okay, we got to do something about this. So we've got quiet rooms. We've got concussion again, protocol where if we referee thinks the guy got hit too hard, off the ice. You see it a lot in the NFL where they bring them into the tent. And the big reason for that, a big part of that reason is because teams have a liability to these guys. Well, this week now they're talking about, the story has come out, Robert Leonard has saying that he was given prescription painkillers and drugs from others than doctors, other people than doctors. He called Alan Vigneault a dinosaur. And then Sestito, this guy played 150 games, a tough guy, came out yesterday, I guess, on the heels of this conversation that Robert Leonard's going to have with, I don't know, everybody, Russ, he wants to. this guy said he was given handfuls and handfuls of.
Well, I got to say this. The trainers are some of the best in the world, and they're so passionate about what they do and how they treat the players, and all they're thinking about is how to make the players' life easier, how to get them back on the ice faster. Mm-hmm. And so they do a lot of work behind the scenes. The rooms in the training room, the medical room, where we all hang out and have morning coffee and guys are getting treatments and it's really warm in there. I don't know. And they got TVs in there. And so guys are watching sports and they're getting treatment and guys are having coffees and they're talking. And in those rooms are a lot of medicines for players. If like you got a cold stomach thing, and before every season, I would go in and I would grab all this medicine to take home for my family. If you know, you NyQuil or this or that,
Tylenol or
yeah,
whatever.
Tylenol or, you know, whatever. It wasn't a lot, but whatever you can buy over the counter. And then the trainers have prescriptions for things that say somebody gets injured. They've already got stuff for injuries, and they can give the player something right away. And I remember towards the end of my career that they were handing out sleeping pills, like in the playoffs. If you had a hard time going to sleep, they would have sleeping pills and they would give them to you if you wanted them. Mm-hmm. So, and
it is Ambien, I think, right?
That's what he's talking about, is that after a game, now you charter everywhere. So the guys get all jacked up before the game, 7:30 at night. You've had 4 cups of coffee. Guys are drinking Red Bull. I used to have take two Sudafeds because they're an upper, mm-hmm. and 2 cups of coffee. And then what do you think? I couldn't freaking sleep till 5 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning. It was awful. Mm-hmm. But I didn't like sleeping pills. I tried it once and I didn't like it, so I never took them. But I would just sit there and toss and turn and toss and turn, and I couldn't get sleep. So guys started taking the sleeping pills because it knocked them out and they could sleep. And it became, so I retired 99, and that's when I really started to notice guys taking sleeping pills was the 98, 99. And then I'm hearing it just got worse.
Right.
So
are you okay with that, Russ? Or what's your stance on this about, you know, because part of me, Russ, there's many sides. Let's say one of them is you can't blame the team for everything.
No,
I mean, fuck, no. You're an adult.
You go into a bathroom and there's guys doing cocaine and they say, do you want to do coke? You have a choice. I'm going to do it or I'm not going to do it. And if a trainer's walking up and down the aisle with sleeping pills, do you want a sleeping pill? He's asking yes or no. I think it's on the player. If they're, you know, and now, and then it becomes a problem because guys started fooling around with them, taking more than they should. I've heard stories of guys who'd stay awake because they wanted to feel the high of it. I've never heard of that. To me, a retired player that we both know very well told me that. And I went, really? He goes, yeah, we used to take them. And then we'd go to the bar after and drink beer and feel this. He goes, this is crazy sensation. And I'm like, really? Who takes a sleeping pill? He goes, oh, you should try it. And I go, I'm not trying that.
Right.
I think the whole, like, you know, these trainers, unfortunately, are going to get in shit now because, you know, they talk to the team doctors all the time. Like they're on the phone with them every day about players and this and that. Mm-hmm. And they're very informed. And unfortunately, they're going to get in shit over this because how are you going to, okay, you're on the road. A guy hurts his ankle and you want to give him something that they have. And the doctor hasn't written a prescription. So how are they going to waive that? That's, I guess, what I'm asking. Like, can they do that over the phone? Like, describe the injury and then go, okay, give him this, this, and that, and then the trainer's off the hook? I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I, you know, it's unfortunate, but I don't think anybody, like, is being forced to do anything. I sure hope not. And if they're getting forced, then there's a problem.
Now you got a big issue, right?
But if they're just asking who wants this and who wants that, and then the person's going, yeah, I want some. Well, that I don't know. I really don't think that's the trainer's fault.
Yeah, the fear is, and the awkward part about this is, you know, it's a professional sport. It's all about winning, whether you like it or not. You know, I don't care who you are. It's all about winning. And do these kids come in and they've got some pain, you know? First of all, Russ, I think being a recovering alcoholic and addict myself, I think there should be a list of addictive medications, you know? Mm-hmm. Oxycontin, you know, painkillers are high, yeah. can be highly addictive. Is Ambien addictive? I don't know. I don't think so, but that's the big problem I see, Russ, as a guy goes, I better take this because I'm part of a team. Fuck, I don't want to sit out. I might get bent, blah, blah, blah. And are they getting some of these drugs?
Yeah, I mean, the strong drug, I was talking about sleeping pills. That freaking Oxycontin is crazy. My son had finger surgery and he came after the surgery. He took one of those things. Mm-hmm. It was like he didn't even have any pain, nothing.
Fingers.
He was fine. And in fact, he was like, and they gave him 30 pills.
Oh my God.
30. And the next day he took a half and then I flushed him down the toilet.
Yeah. Yeah. They're scary.
Because they were changing him. And so, yeah, there's that strong shit. I have no time for. I mean, that stuff is, I mean, I don't know what he's talking about. Past sleeping pills. Mm-hmm. I can only really talk about the sleeping pills that,
right.
you know, they were handing them out. Oxycontin and all that crap. Well, that's crazy. That shit.
Here's the story. Former NHL enforcer Tom Sestito is the most recent player to open up about his experience with prescription painkiller and Ambien use. He suited up for 154 games, detailed how at times he was given and using insane amounts of Toradol and anti-inflammatory non-narcotic painkiller. Is there such a thing? And Ambien, which is usually used to treat insomnia. Good for Robert Leonard for standing up for the greater good is the quote. I can only speak for myself. The amount of vitamin T and Ambien I was given is insane. As the NHL is getting a lot younger, these kids should know what they are walking into. So he's kind of passing the blame there, Rusty.
Yeah.
Yeah. His comments come just after Vegas Golden Knights goaltender Robin Leonard tweeted about several issues, but his claims that many teams around the NHL shell out unprescribed medications such as Ambien painkillers, benzodiazepines to players seem to gather the most momentum over the last couple of days. So... He called Leonard called for the Philadelphia Flyers to fire dinosaur coach Alan Vigneault. What followed was massive speculation and assumption that the goaltender was accusing the Flyers coaching staff of handing out pills. Anyway,
I thought it was the way what I read was he was just the way he treated the players like robots. I didn't.
Well, Vigneault adamantly denied claims of ever mistreating players before Leonard clarified to the to ESPN on Monday that he was not accusing Vigneault. Vigneault, of see how much I used to drink? I called him Vino.
Yeah.
On any specific member of a team or of giving unprescribed medication to players. So anyway, you better be careful what he's jumping on board there, accusing guys of, you know. You better shut your mouth, man.
Well, that's the old thinking before you tweet.
Yeah, before you pause. So
yeah.
Anyway, Rusty, good show. Next week we're gonna find a guest. We're going to find a guest. Uh-oh. Here's what we're working on. I love this, Russ. I feel like one of those. Here's what we're working on coming up in the next show. Mark Messier has told us he would love to come on the show. So has Brett Hull. I've been in contact with both of them. Chris Chelios just told me to fuck right off. That's all that was.
that's Chelios.
No, but I'm kidding. I'm kidding, but he's agreed to. So we're going to have someone special for you next week for sure. Russ, do you carry on what you're doing? Go... I don't know. Go drink a bunch more Red Bull. White Claw, Rusty. I'd hand those up.
Yeah.
Could you imagine if the trainer came along in the dressing room, Russ, going, take a couple of White Claws?
Yeah, I was more worried about the beer on the plane, not the Ambien.
Does anyone ever have a shot of tequila, Russ, before the game or anything?
No.
Or
are you kidding?
No, I'm not kidding. I know you.
Why would you do that?
get you a little loose.
Espresso, coffee.
Yeah. Okay, anyone, everyone, thanks for tuning in. The numbers are going up. We got to talk to Eddie, our marketing guy, next week and see how we're doing.
Closing on 7,000 listeners.
We got listeners are growing, and we're really pleased about that. So we're going to start to give away some stuff pretty soon. So stay tuned. That is another show in the books, Rusty boy. What are you going back to do?
I'm going to go have a cigar outside.
By the way.
Yeah.
You know the people you know, Russ.
Okay? Uh-huh.
All right. You know everybody. You know more than the president. You got the Rolodex. I understand, Russ, one of your most successful friends, Pard.
Oh, Pard Erdman.
Right. Retired. Uber rich. Has taken a shining to the big fellow over here, Russ.
Oh, I know. It's pissing me off. So Pard and Kathy.
Give his background a little bit, Russ. Pard.
Pard Erdman is the most interesting man I've ever met in my life. And he's my Maui dad. So when I lived there for 3.5 years, Pard helped me out in so many ways. And we formed this friendship that is just life lasting. And it's just incredible. I get emotional even thinking about it. And
oh, nice.
Lots of lunches, lots of dinners, lots of story time. And we drank at the end of every dinner, we'd have a couple cowboy juices, which is whiskey and water. And, brutal. And then we, and anyways, we just, he's done so many great things in his life, but when he was a young man, he went over and bought, Ulapalakula Ranch. I might've beat that up. Anyways, that's the ranch. And he bought in 63 and he's been in Maui ever since. And, he's a member of Augusta and Cypress and McKenna.
Wow. I didn't and know that.
Kathy, who's been, hanging out, Kathy's from Chicago, Wisconsin area. And, she's been over there helping out Pard ever since I left, cooking his meals. And, who knows, Kathy, what else you're doing, but, she's looking after Pard.
We'll just make enough.
Yeah. And,
cooking something.
So they want to meet at Cypress. So Pard has a house on the Cypress golf course.
Well, beautiful.
And, he would like, they suggested that, you know, we all meet there and threw your name in the hat. I know. And you,
it's nice. Oh, yeah. Beautiful. So,
anyways, we might be going to Cypress to play. I've been there once with Pard's friend,
right,
Craig Heatley, and he was kind enough to take myself and Mike Melvin there. And then
cool, man.
Anyways, we're gonna go to Cypress.
Cypress, yeah. Here I come, baby.
Yeah.
Okay. It's
bullshit.
Take it easy, everyone. We'll bullshit. Talk to you next week. I gotta go get off new clubs and some outfits,
yeah,
shorts, everything, man. Okay. Take it easy, Rusty. Woohoo!
Yeah, piss off.
See you later.
See ya.
Thanks for being with us. Please be sure to subscribe to The Suspendables today and share the show with your friends and followers. And find out everything you need to know about the show on our brand new website, thesuspendables.com.